Welcome back into Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Andy Bulbarch with you until 6 o'clock tonight. The bowl slate is extraordinarily full. We talked about that a little bit yesterday, and we're going to have Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio on with us here in just a moment to talk about some of the games going on in the early stages of the bowl season. We'll get into the Army-Navy game this weekend and much more as well. Adam, it's been a while, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you on this wonderful Friday evening?
Doing very well, man. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving, and good to be back on the program here.
Well, great to have you back, and let's get right into the Army-Navy game. Handicapping this weekend's game, it's really the biggest one on the calendar for a lot of college football fans, and I think there's some interesting ways of breaking this down. Navy's giving 7 in this game, and I think the most fascinating thing to me, in reading through your recap earlier today or your preview earlier today, is that 14 straight years, this game has actually gone under. I mean, that shouldn't be too surprising, should it?
No, not really. When you look at the composition of these two teams, both of them run that triple option offense. About, you know, 90% or so of their plays are going to be running plays. And, you know, hey, it's difficult if you don't see that all the time. But if you see that all the time, you know how to defend it. You know how to be gap responsible because you do it every day in practice against the offense. So that's why this has generally been a very low scoring game, generally a very close game, too. And in fact, you've got Navy about a 10-point favorite here in this game, some 10.5s out there in the market as well. You got to go back to 2013 to find the last time this game was decided by more than a touchdown, and the 2 years before that, 4 points and 6 points. So generally a very, very close game, and everybody knows that. And yet this line comes out double digits simply because Navy's been a lot better than Army here so far this year. Army's been an underachieving team. Their season win total was up in the 9.5-10 range. The problem is they never came close to it. They played a very weak schedule and still struggled with it. So Navy gets this big favorite role, but right now, based on the action we're seeing, nobody's too interested in backing Navy at the big price.
Well, and of course, that kind of officially ends the regular season, and then at the end of next week, we launch right into the college football bowl season. As far as the market report for this bowl season goes, let's take a look at some early games, and we've got a couple of interesting ones early on. We start with Buffalo against Charlotte in the Bahamas Bowl. Tough to feel sorry for guys. We've got to make the trip out to the Bahamas to play this thing, but why is it you think that the Bulls are getting some early love?
Yeah, this is really interesting because for those that follow the MAC, and obviously a lot of people around here do, you know, whether they went to those schools or just follow them because they're close, the MAC has been awful in bowl games. This conference has not done well at all whatsoever. I think what happened this time around is that it was kind of priced into the line a little bit, that there was this expectation at the MAC, because they don't do well, that people would bet against them. Well, ironically enough, with the first two bowl games here on Friday, Buffalo and Charlotte in that Bahamas Bowl, Kent State and Utah State in the Frisco Bowl down in Texas, the MAC teams are both taking money there in those two games. Buffalo up from -4.5 to -6.5. Kent State down from +8 or +9 to +7. In the Bahamas Bowl in particular, Buffalo's got a very good running game. Charlotte does too, but Buffalo has a better defense. And a lot of times the starting point for people in these bowl games, you take the team that can run the football and you take the team that plays defense, because the expectation is that with that long layoff, pass-dependent teams are going to struggle a little bit with their timing, struggle to get things going. You don't have to worry about that when you've got a really good running game. So both of these teams do. The difference is Buffalo much better defensively. That's the reason why that line's going towards the Bulls.
Sticking with the MAC, on that very same day of the Bahamas Bowl, we've got the Frisco Bowl featuring the Kent State Golden Flashes and Utah State. Do you like Kent getting 9 points in this game?
Yeah, I certainly like Kent getting more than a touchdown, you know, in that 7.5, 8, 8.5 range. Now across the market, it's down to 7. And it's kind of interesting, too, because Utah State's quarterback, Jordan Love, he had the opportunity to be a graduate transfer, play another year in college next year, try to bump up his draft stock a little bit. But he said he's going into the NFL draft. So that's the last game for the Utah State quarterback, and he takes on a very bad Kent State defense. So I kind of figured that this line would go the other way a little bit, but it has been Kent State money here so far. You know, Sean Lewis done a great job with Kent. They're in a bowl game in his second season. He's only, I think, 34, 35 years old, something like that. So he'll be going to a bigger job here soon. But I think a lot of people respecting what Kent State has done, not respecting how far below expectations Utah State was. I think it's seven. It's a tough play to make. I think that you're going to have a very high-scoring game here, though. So I would look to go over the total, this total in the 65 range. I don't think that there's a whole lot of defense played in this game. Should be a pretty good environment for points down in Texas. So if you like a higher-scoring game, maybe you do like Kent plus the points, because if you need defense, Kent State's not the place to look.
We'll stop there with the college football talk, and we'll launch into that next week when we have an opportunity to really dive deep into that college football bowl season. But again, it kickstarts 1 week from today with those two bowls, the Bahamas Bowl and, of course, the Frisco Bowl as well. We'll transition now into the NFL side of things. Well, a full slate again this coming weekend, Adam, as we really kind of get into the nitty-gritty here towards the end of the regular season. We'll start with the oldest rivalry in NFL history and the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers. Lots of Chicago money across the market in Lambeau on Sunday. Why do you think that the Bears are getting so much money right now as a four-point dog?
Yeah, this is a really interesting situation because you kind of have the public perception being very low on Chicago, very low on Mitch Trubisky. The public is kind of split on this game, but the line is moving down, as you mentioned, Chicago from plus five to plus four, which does suggest that there's some respected money out there in the market on Chicago. And I don't think that this is necessarily a buy of Chicago. I think it's more of a fade of Green Bay. This is a team that, you know, is obviously doing very well, leads the NFC North, but this is also a team that has a negative yards per play differential. They are not playing statistically like a 10-3 team. When you get a situation like that where a team gives up more yards per play than it gains, the expectation is around 500, maybe a game below that. So a lot of people are looking to fade Green Bay here at this point in time. They're plus 11 in turnover margin. That's been a big help for them. Aaron Rodgers has only thrown a couple of picks on the season. But people are actively looking to go against Green Bay here. So they'll do it with Chicago, with a pretty good Bears defense. And if you really dig into the Packers this season, they've been exceptional in the first quarter. Matt LaFleur does really, really well with those scripted plays. After that, it's been a struggle for them. So I guess the hope here would be the Bears, a lot of familiarity with the personnel. They can hang on for dear life in the first quarter. And then over the final three quarters, the Bears may have the advantage. So a fade of Green Bay, maybe a little bit of a buy on Chicago. But this will be something to keep in mind once we get to the playoffs, is that a lot of people are low on Green Bay. So maybe that's one of those first weekend upsets we may be looking for.
Staying with the NFL, taking a look at the Broncos-Chiefs matchup at Arrowhead. Boy, a ton of movement in this game. Why do you think the line has moved almost 3 points from the start of the week?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Denver came down from about plus 12 to plus 9 or so, and then it went back up a little bit to Kansas City minus 10. Now, you've got a Denver team that, I mean, they're better than their record suggests. In fact, if you look at them again statistically in terms of yards per play differential, they're around more like a 500 team. They're only minus 25 in point differential, but they're 5-8. And at this point in time of the season, people will bet on those regression candidates. Teams that have a low turnover margin, teams that have underachieved relative to some of those yards per play numbers. Denver's been one of them. The Denver defense has actually played pretty well. Vic Fangio's scheme is very complicated. It's very wordy. It's something that can be a little bit difficult to pick up. But they've been playing better on defense here in the second half of the season. I think maybe some of that has to do with Fangio, you know, kind of installing some more things. Also, it's a Denver team that takes pretty good care of the football, too. And at this point in time, that's important. I think there's also some semblance out there in the market that maybe this is a tough spot for Kansas City. Because Kansas City coming off that win over the Patriots, a big win for them, obviously improves their standing there in the AFC. You get that at this time of the year. Sometimes you just kind of have a little bit of a letdown. They've got a three-game cushion in the division now. They're probably not going to get a top-two record. So maybe people just kind of figure that Kansas City goes through the motions a little bit here, and it's tough to go through the motions and cover double digits in the NFL.
Again, we're talking with Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, the Browns are down in the desert this weekend taking on the Arizona Cardinals. Right now, Browns 3-point favorites against the Cards. But the over has actually gone up a little bit as well from the start of the week. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, the over going up is pretty interesting here. I think first and foremost, it suggests that the reports coming out of Berea about Baker Mayfield's hand have been pretty good this week. You know, last week he didn't throw much in practice, if at all. We kind of saw that play out against the Bengals where he was just off. I mean, he didn't look right. So my guess is that some of the activity on the over suggests that people are getting some good information about Baker in practice. The other thing is this. You get Arizona, and their offense was really good at the start of the year. Cliff Kingsbury was doing something different. It was working. Lately, it really hasn't. But one of the biggest problems for Arizona in the season, Kyler Murray has been sacked 46 times on the year. And the Browns, they don't have the same pass rush without Myles Garrett. So if you give Kyler time to do something, time to move around, time to create, they can move the football, they can score some points. So what this tells me is that the betting market out there doesn't expect Cleveland to get a lot of pressure, expects Baker to move up and down the field. And keep in mind here, too, you know, with the Browns a three-point favorite here, Baker Mayfield was at Texas Tech. Cliff Kingsbury didn't give him a scholarship. He gave a scholarship to some guy named Patrick Mahomes. So Baker Mayfield not super thrilled with Cliff Kingsbury. We know based on his personality, he seems like the type to hold a grudge. So I think a lot of people expect Baker to go out there and put on a show. Think Murray has a good chance against the Browns team. It's not rushing the passer as well. High-scoring game. Expecting the Browns to cover here is what the market suggests. I'm not entirely sure about the Browns covering. I think this is a difficult spot for them going out west, but I do expect points here in this game for sure.
Looking forward to that one on Sunday, no question about it. Well, that covers the gamut as far as football goes, but we are in the heart of hoop season right now. Lots of great non-conference college basketball matchups and some pretty strong matchups in conference play as well. Ohio State takes on Minnesota in Minnesota on Sunday, and also the NBA in full swing as well. We'll start with the NBA, Adam. Any particular NBA matchups stand out to you over the next couple of days from a handicapping perspective?
I think one that's real intriguing tonight is the Lakers down in Miami. You know, anytime LeBron goes to a place where he's played, you know, there's a lot of fanfare. He obviously knows a lot of people, probably makes a couple of appearances here or there, whether it's with, you know, former business associates or, you know, possibly charities or something like that in the area. That's one that really stands out to me. The Lakers are playing extremely well, which is kind of a surprise at 22-3 and 16-9 against the spread when they're one of the most scrutinized teams in the NBA. They're actually playing through the regular season here, which is a little bit surprising to me. That being said, they're in a stretch with 8 of 9 on the road. And again, LeBron, when he goes to Miami, it's not all about basketball. He's probably got, you know, club promoters he wants to go see, bunch, you know, some of his other associates that were down there. I don't think it's all about basketball for him when he goes to some of those places. Miami, well-rested, 2 days off before this game. The Heat are getting 5.5, 6 points here at home tonight. I do like Miami a little bit in that one. And then over on the college side, real quickly, some interesting games tomorrow. You got Oregon on the road at Michigan, a couple of top 15 teams. Memphis and Tennessee, those two teams do not like each other. They're playing a series of 3 head-to-head matchups. Next year, the game will be in Nashville. That's kind of expected to be the rubber match, so to speak, of the 3. Big fight at the end of last year's game. That should be a real exciting game on Saturday. I don't know who wins. Tennessee will be a short favorite in that one, but that would be worth the price of admission if you want to sit down and watch how that one goes. Should be very, very physical.
No question about that. Well, before we let you go, my friend, I've got to ask you, being the big baseball and the big Indians fan that you are, a lot of news this week about a potential deal being put together to send Frankie Lindor to the Dodgers. Obviously, we haven't heard a whole lot the last 48 hours. That report kind of picked up some steam in the middle of the week. Not sure how much of that you're actually buying, but also of the alleged prospects coming back in return, the Dustin Mays and, of course, the Gavin Luxes of the world. When you see a package like that, is that enough to get you excited about what could potentially be coming back in return if, indeed, they do deal Lindor?
Yeah, I mean, that would be something you would have to do. If both Gavin Lux and Dustin May are on the table in a Lindor deal, and I've even seen, you know, some of the rumors out there that maybe an Alex Verdugo gets thrown in if you possibly put Corey Kluber into the deal, something like that, I think you have to do it. I mean, again, you're talking about getting players in May and Lux that you'd essentially have 10 years of combined control over, whereas with Lindor, I mean, he's gone at the end of 2021. Whether he's already been traded or he leaves in free agency, he's gone. I get it from a PR standpoint. Trading the face of the franchise is a very difficult thing to do, especially with the narrative being that you can't afford him. They can afford him in a vacuum. They can't put a team around him if he's taking up a big percentage of the payroll, which is why they're looking to make this deal. Also, too, if you acquire a guy like a Dustin May, you've got the opportunity to trade somebody like a Mike Clevenger or, you know, maybe one of the other guys, an Aaron Civale, Zach Plesac, something like that, to maybe fill that need at second base or get some more depth within the organization. So they're kind of looking at this as a big picture type of thing, maybe working in a third team, which they've been known to do before. I think you've got to do it. If those two names, Lux and May, are on the table, and anything else of significance, you know, if you included a Kluber or somebody like that, they have to entertain offers like that. I mean, you can't let those opportunities go by the wayside. I mentioned this on Twitter when I went through a long tweet thread a couple of weeks ago. I think the hardest decision here is the correct decision, and that's the decision to trade Lindor. And I think it's something that they wind up having to do this winter, because next winter he loses a lot of value. And if you trade him mid-season, that's kind of a difficult thing too, because you're expected to be in contention. So they got to do it this winter if they do it at all. And I guess we'll keep refreshing Twitter and seeing if it's happened.
Yeah, just have to wait and see how this all plays out. But it'll be awfully interesting to see what the Tribe does here over the next few months leading into spring training. Adam, as always, my friend, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Take it easy, Andy.
Thanks, Adam. You do the same. That's Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Let's step aside and take a break. We'll come back with more after this here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.